There's a holiday that comes up on my Google Calendar, I noticed the other day. But in Israel, it's a well-known holiday. In Chutz La'aretz, understandably, it might not be so well-known. It's called Yom Ha'aliyah. It's called Aliyah Day, Immigration Day, Moving to Israel Day. I think there's 2 days on the calendar where it's observed, or I don't know what the entire story behind that is. But there is a date in Nisan that's observed, and then there is Zayin Mar Cheshvan, which was this past Sunday, is often observed as Yom Aliyah. And the fact that it falls at this point in the calendar is not coincidental, but it's meant to coincide with Lech Lecha, because that's the first mention we get of Eretz Yisrael and the idea of the Jewish people inheriting the land and the mandate to be there. So an individual named Yaakov HaGoel, who was involved with the World Zionist Congress, so he wrote in the Jerusalem Post a few years ago that Zionists heard the call that parallels Avraham Avinu, the call that he heard, because Avraham Avinu, when he went to Eretz Yisrael, he had no idea what was in store for him. Hashem told him to go, and he goes, and he went on complete emunah. And there's something to be said for the fact that that was true of the modern Zionists as well. That, well, it wasn't necessarily religiously motivated, it wasn't God calling them, but they did make the choice to move to Eretz Yisrael. They felt like it was necessary, they felt like it was important, they felt like there was an opportunity there. But they did it without necessarily knowing how that was going to go. They didn't necessarily know, what would come of it, if it was going, if there would be prosperity there. There was not a lot there. The descriptions of Eretz Yisrael at that time, it was fairly desolate. So they really had to go not because, Israel was this beacon of technology, it wasn't startup nation, but they went because they felt like there was a calling there. And Hagol further points out that this is really the parsha that demonstrates our right to the land. So again, while in Sefer Bereishit, in terms of the series of mitzvah of the week, so Sefer Bereishit can be a little bit difficult because there's not necessarily an explicit mitzvah in many of the parashiyot in Sefer Bereishit. But at the same time, I felt like discussing the mitzvah of Yishuv Haaretz, of settling the land, was is important, even though it's not necessarily mentioned as a mitzvah in this parsha. But clearly, there's importance. So the idea of Bnei Israel inheriting this land, it's the wrong screen. Idea of Am Yisrael inheriting the land of Eretz Yisrael comes up at least 4 different times in the Parsha. So first it says, so this is the opening pasuk of the parsha, the very famous call for Abraham to go to what was then Eretz Canaan. So Reb Chaim Navon of Eretz Yisrael notes that it's interesting here that Eretz Yisrael here is not considered the homeland of Abraham Avinu. And it's not the homeland of the Jewish people, because what was his homeland? He was told to leave it. He was supposed to leave his homeland, right? Ur Kasdim, Haran. His homeland was the place that he left, but Eretz Yisrael does not seem to be the homeland of Avraham Avinu. That's a very fascinating thing to point out, and he points out that there's some implications of this. Number one, that it's an error to assume that. Even though we do relate to Eretz Yisrael as our homeland, it's an error to assume that it's always ours, and that we will always have it. So, for example, just a couple weeks ago in Parsha Bereishit, there's a discussion of why we even need to have Sefer Bereishit in the first place. So Rashi quotes Rabbi Yitzchak as saying that people might come and say that we were colonizers. People still say this today, that we were colonizers, that we stole the land. So people can look back on Sefer Bereishit and say, look, that Hashem promised the land to Avraham Avinu and his descendants. So we are the rightful inheritors of the land. But Ramban takes it a step further and says that in order for Am Yisrael to lay claim to the land, so we have to act properly in it, and we have to treat it properly, because otherwise, so Hashem created the world. So Hashem, just as easily as Hashem promised Avraham Avinu the land, Hashem can take it away if we do not do that. And we see in the Pasuk, in Parsha Acharimot, Mitakiha Aretz, if we do immoral acts inside Eretz Yisrael, so it could easily, literally, vomit us. So Rav Chaim Navon clarifies that, and on the one hand, even though we have this connection to Eretz Yisrael and we do relate to it as our promised land, at the same time, the fact that the pasuk says "Mimolat Techa," not referring to Eretz Yisrael, but to a land outside of Eretz Yisrael, so that might give us a little bit of a hint that that there is that element that it's not entirely promised, that we have to be deserving of it. Perhaps a more uplifting insight into the pasuk from the Maharal indicates, and I saw this in the Sefer Imre Baruch by Baruch Simon. The question is, why did Hashem not identify Eretz Canaan or Eretz Yisrael in the pasuk? He just says, "I'll take you to land that I will show you." El Ha'aretz Asher Araka. So why is that? Why is that? So the Maharal says that Hashem didn't reveal immediately what the land was going to be in order to create chavivut, in order to create suspense, and thereby adoration. Sometimes we get more excited, and we are more enticed, and we're more passionate for something when we haven't quite attained it, we don't know what it is. So that's why according to Maharal, it just says El Ha'aretz Asher Araka, because we don't necessarily know when we don't necessarily know where we're going. So that creates that excitement, and the fact that it's written in the Torah like that is also meant to do that for us. That there's an element of longing, and there's that hiddenness that makes us want to go forward and to look for it. Okay, so this is one pasuk where the idea of settling Eretz Yisrael comes up. Another two psukim in the 15th chapter during the episode of Brit Bein Avtarim. So pasuk says, "Vayomer Elav Ani Hashem Asher Tziticha Mi Ur Kasdim Blatei Lecha Et Ha'aretz Hazot Lirishta." I took you out of Ur Kasdim in order to give you this land to inherit it. So as I copied and pasted the wrong English translation, it's totally not related. But here's another idea of inheriting the land of Israel. And then finally, in that chapter, "Vayomer Karat Hashem Et Avram Brit Lemor." Hashem made a covenant with Abram and said, "To your offspring, I assign this land from the river of Egypt to the great river, the river of Euphrates." So we have not yet, even in the time of Tanakh, entirely fulfilled the notion that there would be a Jewish homeland stretching from the Mediterranean to the Euphrates. Perhaps if you include Arabs in the descendants of Abraham in that sense, maybe. But that has yet to happen from that perspective. There's a midrash that brings in this pasuk that says that when Abraham was at Aram Naharaim, before he got to Eretz Yisrael, so he passed by, he saw that there was a party culture. People eat and drink, and they feast all the time. They say, "May this not be my lot. May this not be the land that I'm going to be in." But when he passed through Eretz Yisrael, so he saw the productivity, he saw that they were farming, that there's agriculture, that they were seeding and sowing, said, "May this be my land." And then that's when Kadosh Baruch Hu said, "Lazarcha natati ta'aretz hazot," that to your descendants, to your offspring, I sign this land, which is in some ways prophetic, because that's the early modern Zionists. That's literally what they were doing in Eretz Yisrael before everybody else arrived. And there's another mention of inheriting the land later on in chapter 17. "And I assign the land You sojourn into you and your offspring to come. Kol Eretz Kanaan Lechuzat Olam, all the land of Kanaan as an everlasting holding. It's going to be forever. Ve'iti Lahem Le'olim. That will be their God. Okay, so these are a few mentions of the notion that Avraham's descendants are supposed to inherit the land. And not only did Hashem give the land to Avraham, but to his descendants. But there's no mitzvah here necessarily to settle the land. There's no mitzvah to relate to. So the question is there a mitzvah to settle in the land of Israel? Some of these ideas I got from an article written by Rav Hershel Schachter. So I'm grateful for his elucidating this matter so clearly. It's printed in the Koren Machzor for Yom HaTzva'ut. So that's where this essay was printed. So first, if we look at a Mishnah in Masechet Ketubot, Masechet Ketubot is often known as a Shas Katan, the mini Talmud, because there's so many different topics, and even though the focus is primarily on marriage, there's so many different topics in it that it seems to encapsulate so many different important topics within Judaism, within the Torah. So at the very end, there's a discussion of Eretz Yisrael. So Mishnah says, "Hakol ma'alin le'Eretz Yisrael, ve'ein hakol motzi'in." So anyone can force their family to go to Eretz Yisrael, ve'ein hakol motzi'in, but people cannot force their family to leave Eretz Yisrael. Again, likewise with Yerushalayim. Echad anashim ve'echad hanashim. So this applies both to men and women. A wife can force her husband to move to Eretz Yisrael and vice versa. But they can't force each other to leave, right? So the Gemara brings a bright, so that explains. Hu omer la'alot, if he says we're going to Eretz Yisrael, v'hi omer shelo la'alot, and she says we're not going to go, kofin ota la'alot, we force her to go. V'im lav, if not, teitzei b'lo ketubah, she would be divorced, she's allowed to be divorced, and she forfeits her right to collect the money that's stipulated in the ketubah. And likewise, he omer la'alot, if she says, I want to make aliyah, duhu omer shelo la'alot, he says, I don't want to make aliyah, kofin oto la'alot. So we forced him to make aliyah, v'im lav yotzi v'itin ketubah. He has to divorce her and pay her the requisite sum in the ketubah. Okay, so both parties have the right to force each other to move to Eretz Yisrael. Likewise, he omer latzei, v'hu omer shelo latzei, kofi notash shelo latzei. So if she wants to leave and he doesn't, so we force her to stay in Eretz Yisrael. V'im lav teitzei b'lo ketubah. So then she's divorced without forfeiting her ketubah. And hu omer latzei, v'hi omer shelo latzei, kofi notash shelo latzei. If he says, I want to leave and she doesn't want to. So again, the ball's in her court. We force him to stay, and if not, then he's required to divorce her, give the requisite ketubah. Okay, so must be some indication here that there is a mitzvah to make aliyah. Given the stakes here that you know, they're allowed to divorce each other if one of them refuses to make aliyah, or if one of them decides to leave. So there's divorce required. So that's obviously a fairly serious matter. In most cases, for example, if a husband wants to divorce his wife, so he has to give the ketubah. But this is a case where he's 100% in the right, so that's not required. There's a midrash halacha in the Sifrei that says, Ve'irashta otam v'yishavta, that you will dwell in the land, you'll inherit the land and dwell in it. So there was an incident where a number of rabbis, Rabbi Huda ben Beteram, Rabbi Matya ben Harash, and Rabbi Hananya ben Achi, Rabbi Shua, Rabbi Yonatan, so they all left Eretz Yisrael, and they got to a place called Paltom, and they remembered Eretz Yisrael, right? So they were outside Eretz Yisrael, they remember it, and they raised their eyes and they were weeping and they ripped their clothing. And they recalled the verse, V'irashim otav yishavtem bash martem lasoko chukim ha'ele. So a verse referring to inheriting and settling Eretz Yisrael. And they said, Amru yeshivat Eretz Yisrael shkula keneged kol hamitzvot batorah. dwelling in the land of Israel is equivalent to fulfilling all mitzvot in the Torah. So from this statement, it seems like there seems to be that settling in Eretz Yisrael must constitute some mitzvah if it's going to be equivalent to all other mitzvot. We see a number of statements like that with tzitzit, with Talmud Torah. So there are a number of mitzvot that have a weight that correspond to all other mitzvot. But obviously, you know, the small number of mitzvot that get to that qualification point to the fact that they are so central and essential to Judaism. If we look at one particular pasuk, it talks about perhaps the mitzvah to settle Eretz Yisrael. So there's a pasuk at the end of Sefer Bamidbar that says, "You shall take possession of the land and settle in it, for I have assessed the land to you to possess." So do we have a mitzvah here? Do we not have a mitzvah here? So Ramban, Nachmanides on this pasuk, says, "Al dati zo mitzvah asehi." He says explicitly in his commentary on the Torah, okay, and his commentary on the Torah is not necessarily a halachic work. He's not necessarily going through and counting each mitzvah. But here he makes a point in saying this is a positive commandment. "Itzave otam sheyishvu ba'aretz rishu otaki ki hu nitana lahem." Hashem's commanding that they settle the land of Israel, that they inherit it. "V'lo yimasu menachat Hashem." They should not reject the inheritance from God. And he says maybe there will be some people that will think that you know, we need to go and conquer Eretz Shinar, which was Babylonia, or Eretz Ashur, Assyria, all areas of Mesopotamia. So those who do that, Yavarom Mitzvah Hashem, those people are transgressing Hashem's commandment, which is interesting and also in some ways prophetic, because there was a point where, in order to make a political arrangement, Theodore Herzl raised the possibility, maybe I think it was Uganda. I think there might be different versions, but I think Uganda was one place that was offered as a homeland for the Jewish people. It would be a place of refuge, and, you know, we'd go back later. But those who were assembled at the World Zionist Congress rightfully said that if we go there, we'll never get to Eretz Yisrael. And nowhere outside of Eretz Yisrael is Eretz Yisrael. You can't have Eretz Yisrael. You know, you can have New York City, which maybe feels like a very Jewish city, but it's not, you know, it accomplishes some purposes, right? To go down Main Street and have a myriad of kosher stores and restaurants and shuls is an amazing thing. It might feel like Yerushalayim, but it's not, because it's not Eretz Yisrael. So you're not fulfilling the mitzvah unless you're in Eretz Yisrael, right? Nowhere else. And he brings the mission, the Gemara, and the Brayta that we were discussing as proof, the fact that that one is allowed to break their marriage and has monetary rights in that as proof. And he unequivocally, Ramban thinks that settling Eretz Yisrael is a positive commandment. However, Rambam, who came before him, had not counted settling Eretz Yisrael as a mitzvah. It's not part of the 613 commandments. So this is something that the Ramban notes on his comments. He listed a whole bunch of mitzvot that he thought that the Rambam left out in his enumeration of the mitzvot. And he says that the fourth mitzvah is to inherit the land. I shouldn't leave it desolate. It's based on the pasuk that we just quoted. So it's not just the Jewish people have the obligation to settle the land, but each individual has a stake in the mitzvah. Even during exile, the mitzvah still applies. Okay, maybe you could say, well, why did the Rambam leave it out? Because it's galut, although it's not so likely, because the Rambam includes plenty of mitzvot that don't apply during galut. But there is the opinion of the Megillat Esther. Megillat Esther was a commentary on the Rambam's Sefer HaMitzvot by Rabbi Isaac de Leon. So he says, why did the Rambam not count the settling land of Israel as a mitzvah because it only applied in the days of Moshe, Yeshua, and David, and only when they weren't outside the land. Aval achar shegalu me'al ad matam, ein mitzvah zeh noheged ledorot ad eid bo hamashiach. So the mitzvah is suspended until the Mashiach comes. Right? So that's what I just alluded to, preempted a little bit. Doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. Why would korbanot still count as a mitzvah in this respect? But he brings as a proof the famous three oaths that many religious anti-Zionists use to preclude the establishment of the state of Israel. So he mentions that as proof that perhaps there's really no mitzvah at this point. And he mentions the midrash before that we mentioned about how the rabbis, when they thought about Eretz Yisrael, how they weren't, you know, that they had been outside the land, that they tore their clothes and they were crying. He said, but im mitzvah zo haita nohega gam lachar korban, if this mitzvah was practiced after applied after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, lam bachu v'karu b'gdehem, why did they cry and rip their clothing? Velo gam ata hayu yicholim l'kayma, they could have still stayed in Eretz Yisrael if they wanted to. So the reason why they were crying is because the mitzvah didn't apply anymore, and they wanted to be able to have that mitzvah. So therefore, he says that this mitzvah only will apply when the Beit HaMikdash will be rebuilt. So that is a little bit of a chidush, but that's what the Megillat Esther says. This approach is generally rejected by halachists. So Tosfot and Subot mentioned perhaps an exemption, because we mentioned before that there is a general mitzvah for the Jewish people to inherit the land of Israel. So what are some exemptions? So Tosfot says, "Einon hegbis manas de ika sakanat drachim." It's dangerous to go to Eretz Yisrael, right, to travel there. Part, in order to fulfill the mitzvah, so you have to, you know, forget whether it's dangerous when it's actually there, but just to get there itself is dangerous. The hechsher mitzvah, again, you know, preparing for the mitzvah itself is dangerous. So it's dangerous. That's one approach. And they also quoted Rabbeinu Chaim. You have Rabbeinu Chaim to achshav ena mitzvah ledor. There are many mitzvahs that are dependent upon the land, and if you don't do them right, then you're transgressing every oath. So what's the best thing to do? The best thing is to say outside of Eretz Yisrael, the mitzvahs don't apply, and then you avoid the whole problem. Okay, we wouldn't use point out, and the Avnei Nezer will point this out, but neither of these arguments would seem to apply nowadays. So the Avnei Nezer was a Hasidish Rav. Let's see if I can quickly Google what his name was. His name was Rav Avram Bornstein. So he says that these reasons don't apply, right? So he says, first of all, the mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael still applies nowadays. And he rejects explicitly the approach of Megillat Esther that it's not a mitzvah. He says you can't even make the argument before that it's dangerous to go. So Avnei Nezer lived, I want to say, in the 19th century. So the idea that it's dangerous to go already, but at that point was sort of rejected. And also the idea that you can't properly observe the mitzvahs there, also not relevant anymore. So Avnei Nezer, quotes Tosfot, maybe at Tosfot's time, that approach was correct, but that is no longer true. The mitzvah applies. And certainly nowadays in 2020, in the year 5781, so it's not dangerous to travel Eretz Yisrael, unless you find airplanes dangerous to travel on in general. But you get on a plane 12 hours, you're in Eretz Yisrael, it's not dangerous to fly there. And Baruch Hashem, there have been many experts who have enabled people to properly follow Shemitah, Trumot, Maserot, all the mitzvot tluy ba'aretz. So we don't really seem to have that problem today. I think next year is actually next year is going to be a Shemitah year, actually. So that is coming up. Okay. So one potential exception to the mitzvah of settling Eretz Yisrael would have been that that's dangerous, that mitzvah hard to fulfill, but we reject that line of. The Bar says, "Ein yotzim Eretz Yisrael chutz la'aretz." We don't leave Eretz Yisrael in order to go to chutz la'aretz unless you have unless the amount to buy grain is out of time for what should be a seller, right? Meaning that it's double, that food is double the price. Okay, so that speaks to potential recession, poverty. So that potentially would be a reason to leave Eretz Yisrael. Barring that, the mitzvah would apply. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah also gives the possibility that a person can leave Eretz Yisrael, even a Kohen can become Tameh and leave Eretz Yisrael in order to learn Torah and to get married. So Rav Heschel Schechter notes that these are all sort of individual circumstances. If one is poor, if one needs to go to yeshiva that's outside Eretz Yisrael, if one needs to get married. So those are things that apply particularly in Eretz Yisrael. Another indication, this is what I was starting to read before, another indication that perhaps that settling Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah is the fact that, so the Gemara says that somebody who buys a field in Syria is like buying a field in the outskirts of Yerushalayim. So what's the relevant halachic application here? So if Sheshit says that you're allowed to write up a bill of sale on Shabbos. So you're gonna write a bill of sale on Shabbos. You're gonna transgress the mitzvah, the prohibition of writing on Shabbos. You're gonna do something that's an Isser Skila. So how could you do that? So Rav explains, no, you're allowed to do Amir LaNachri in order to write a bill of sale in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so that demonstrates the importance of selling Eretz Yisrael that we allow, even though we normally don't allow instructing a non-Jew to do something, especially if it's a Torah prohibition. We normally don't do that, but since the importance of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, because of the importance of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, so we allow that on Shabbos. Okay, so that's another indication that that's relevant mitzvah. There's a Gemara in Tani that says that Eretz Yisrael mashke ota kadosh baruch hu ba'atzmon, that Eretz Yisrael is watered by Hashem itself. Okay, relevant right now is starts to become the rainy season in Eretz Yisrael. They're already saying v'tein tal matar baruch, but the rest of the world is watered by ishaliach, by some sort of intermediary. Shneimar notein matar al pnei haaretz v'shalach mayim al pnei chutzo. So through a shaliach, he sends water outside Eretz Yisrael, but in the land itself, al pnei haaretz, it's a kadosh baruch hu himself. So what this demonstrates is a particular quality of living in Eretz Yisrael, and the Avnei Nezer takes from this, that Kadosh Baruch Hu himself waters the land of Israel, is that the mitzvah living in Eretz Yisrael, even though he says it technically there's a mitzvah to do it today, but perhaps the mitzvah is only best fulfilled when you're benefiting from the land itself and from a Kadosh Baruch Hu directly, right? So it's that direct connection to a Kadosh Baruch Hu that makes Eretz Yisrael special, because water is a source of life. And if I'm outside of Eretz Yisrael and that's how I'm getting my sustenance, so I might still have a connection. It still comes from a Kadosh Baruch Hu, but through an intermediary. But in Eretz Yisrael, when my sustenance comes directly from a Kadosh Baruch Hu, that's extra special. But the Avnei Nezer says, if somebody lives in Eretz Yisrael in his time, so where are they going to get funds for? Where are they going to get their parnasa? Where are they going to get their income, their livelihood from? So people are going to have to send money to Eretz Yisrael because there wasn't a developed community there. So you might be able to live in Eretz Yisrael, but you might need some outside help. So he says, for this reason, many Hasidish Gedolim did not live in Eretz Yisrael because they wanted to have the direct connection to Kadosh Baruch Hu, and they felt like they weren't going to be best fulfilling the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael anyway if they were just going to have to be supported by the outside community. So until they'd be able to really fulfill the mitzvah without the Emtza Ut Hasar, without the intermediary, so they felt like it was best not to go to Eretz Yisrael yet. So that shows the importance of that direct connection. However, there might be another reason why we would go to Eretz Yisrael, not just for the direct connection to Kadosh Baruch Hu, but the Gemara in Sota says, why did Moshe Rabbeinu want to go to Eretz Yisrael so badly? What was he looking for? Was he looking to have the fruit? Right, the fruit that's described, that the spies come back and describe, it's so big. Is that what he was going for? Was he trying to benefit from the land? So this is what Moshe Rabbeinu said. There are many mitzvot that B'nai Yisrael were commanded, but you can't do them outside of Eretz Yisrael. Even Korbanot, they were able to do in the Mishkan outside Eretz Yisrael. But there's certain things, Orla, Truma, Maser, Shemitah. So he said, I want to go to Eretz Yisrael in order to fulfill all the mitzvot. So Kadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, Kluma Tam Vakesh Al Kaber Schar, Mala Ani Alecha Kilu Asitam. Okay, you want to get the reward for doing the mitzvahs of Eretz Yisrael? I'll give you the reward as if you did it. And points to a pasuk that suggests that Moshe suffered through the sins of others, and he sort of carried that weight, right? Because it was because of the sins of Bnei Yisrael. Yeah, he overreacted perhaps at the water. He struck the rock twice. So his sin was sort of the result of the sins of others. But the point is that what Moshe Rabbeinu wanted in Eretz Yisrael was to fulfill the mitzvot atuyot ba'aretz, the special mitzvahs that are there. So that might be a particular emphasis of living in Eretz Yisrael, is being able to fulfill the special mitzvahs. And can add further that Ramban, who we mentioned before, believes that there is a positive commandment to settle the land of Israel at all times. And by the way, he himself did go to Eretz Yisrael. He did emigrate towards the end of his life. So he says that he famously says that all the mitzvahs that we do in Chutz La'aretz are practice for Eretz Yisrael. A person says brachot, it says, puts on tefillin. All that's practice for living for what you do in Eretz Yisrael. Because until you get there, that's just practice. Right? So there might be an element of doing mitzvah in Eretz Yisrael that's most essential. But the Ritva sort of subtly demonstrates the idea that the importance of Eretz Yisrael is a connection with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, because he says that even if we haven't conquered, even if the land loses its kedusha, even if it loses its kedusha, and therefore the mitzvot of Tuva Ba'aretz don't apply, which is a debate whether the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael in order to make mitzvot apply applied after destruction of Beit Hamikdash, but even if it did. The love of the land of Israel is never nullified. So there's still that benefit, perhaps like the Avnei Nezer was saying, of that of being in the land, because it's a land that HaKadosh Baruch Hu set aside for us. It's a land of love. It's a land of connection with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Those might be reasons for being in Eretz Yisrael. And this also might be corroborated by a saying in the Gemara as well, that a person should live in Eretz Yisrael even if most of the people in a particular city are idol worshippers. And likewise, a person shouldn't live outside the land of Israel even if they're Jews, right? So it's better to live in a village of Palestinians, though they're not Ovdei Kochavim, but still, it would be better to live in a Palestinian city where you're maybe there's 10 other Jews than to live in Borough Park or Queens or Muncie. So that still corroborates the idea that it's not necessarily just about being full of Jews and the large, most vibrant Jewish community, but it's about the land itself and that connection with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Fine. How does one fulfill the mitzvah of living dwelling in Eretz Yisrael? So it would seem that you actually have to be there, you have to live there, you have to stay there for a while. But yet there's still the saying of Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Abba Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kol mehalech arba amot be'eretz Yisrael, muftach lo shehu ben olam haba. That anybody who walks 4 amot, 6 feet in land of Israel, is assured a place in the world to come. And there's a question of you know, does this halachically apply? The Magen Avraham says that there's some say that, you know, that the mitzvah of making aliyah is to live in the land of Israel. But he says, Yish amar afil amanat lahachzir. Even if you're planning to go back, just walking in 4 amot in Eretz Yisrael itself constitutes a mitzvah. That's a very powerful idea that there's an element that perhaps we really can fulfill the mitzvah of settling the land of Eretz Yisrael, even if we don't make aliyah today. But even just going to visit itself constitutes a mitzvah. And that's, I think, for those of us who are in Chutz La'aretz, I think that's something very powerful that we can take away, that even visiting itself can constitute a mitzvah. When it's safe to go back, that would be lovely. I want to end with, I titled the shiur, is it time to go? Some people love to talk about, you know, is now the time that we have to pack our bags and to go? Is now the time that we need to be in Eretz Yisrael? There are different approaches that people can take. I believe that, you know, I believe as a religious Zionist said, you know, obviously Aliyah is encouraged and people should go, and it's something we should celebrate. Even if people in our own community were to choose to go, we celebrate that decision. You know, one thing that I would push back against, especially we're coming up on election week. So inevitably there are people who are going to say, if candidate X wins the election, I'm making Aliyah. Right? Or people say that about moving to Canada, moving to Australia also. And by the way, almost nobody who says that actually does that, right? I find that to be entirely, you know, not powerful, because if we're going to go to Eretz Yisrael, so there are situations where if it really, you know, certainly it would have been fruitful if in 1938, 1939, 1940, people were able to just get up and go and were able to see the danger, that would have obviously saved a lot of lives. And if that Chas v'Shalom were to ever get to that point, so of course, you know, that's why, you know, that's one of the important reasons for having Eretz Yisrael is for having that haven. But I hope that, you know, when whoever gets a chance to make Aliyah does so, that they do it because of Chibat Haaretz, because of that, of Haaretz Asher Araka, that land that will show you that, you know, we know is there, maybe we've seen it before, but we haven't fully experienced, and there's still that part of us that's longing and desiring to be there, and there's that suspense of going, because we want that that direct connection to Kadosh Baruch Hu that we don't necessarily have even outside of Eretz Yisrael. Even in large Jewish communities, it's still not the same as being in Eretz Yisrael itself. That Eretz Yisrael do show be called Eretz. So, you know, that's the best place to go, and that's the best that's the best reason to go. And I'll conclude with a tshuva from Shlomo Kluger in Ha'av L'cha Shlomo. So he asked a very fascinating question about a person who married a widow, and he wants to. So he decided to move. He said there were gzerot hachadashot d'sham b'mamvushei nachrim. So there's something going on with new decrees that were worrisome. So he wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael, and she didn't want to go. So the question was, we had that Mishnah at the very beginning. If one spouse wants to make aliyah and the other spouse doesn't want to go, so the other can force the other to go to make aliyah. And if not, so in this case, you know, is he allowed to divorce her without giving her the get if he wants to make aliyah? And he writes something very fascinating. Do we know that this person's really for real, that if he wants to make aliyah for the right reasons, that he's doing it because of the mitzvah? Maybe he's not doing it for the sake of the mitzvah. And in our case, he can't divorce her to go, and he can't say I want to go for the mitzvah, or even for the decrees, because maybe he's really secretly interested in marrying another woman. We have no idea if he's doing this l'shem shamayim. Therefore, he can't force her to go, and he certainly cannot divorce her. So this is a very dramatic case. The reason why I bring it at this ending point is a very powerful point that Reza Hashem, whoever gets a chance to make aliyah, that we should be in it for the right reasons, that we should do it for the sake of the mitzvah. And yes, there can be many benefits to going, but whether you know reflects negatively on the place we're leaving or not, I think the reason to go is because of Chibat Ha'aretz, because of its kedusha, because of the mitzvah that we're doing, and